The human brain picks up information at a rate of between 1 million and 10 million bits of data every single second. So right now on a Zoom call, we're probably pulling in around about 1 million bits of data, you know, sight, sound, smell. You're in New York City and you're on a subway train, well, you're at 10 million, right? There's just a tremendous amount of information flooding to you. Your brain is making decisions based on 100% of that information coming in 100% of the time. You are only consciously aware of less than 50 bits of information per second. Out of 1 to 10 million, you're only aware of, meaning logically processing that you can think of, 50 bits of data. We limit the amount of data, meaning we siphon it into what we are aware of consciously versus unconsciously based on our belief system. If you believe you're stupid, the brain is looking for 50 bits of data to prove to you once again every second that you are, in fact, unworthy, stupid, not good enough, unlovable, you're never worth anything, your dreams aren't going to come true, you know, the world is ending, recession's coming, whatever, 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 right? So we only find that data. If we start asking different questions and we start giving different facts and we verify facts, meaning proof that could be stood in a court of law, and that reinforces a new thought or a new belief system, the brain will find 50 new forms of information to verify that. So I got told I was stupid at 6 years old, so I believed I was stupid. I didn't study. I didn't do homework. I really didn't pay attention. I was a clown. I was a noisy, irritating kid in the classroom. I was constantly being grounded or kicked out or caned or beaten. I mean, I was that kid you didn't want to hang out with in school. And I think I really was trying to be cool. And so I wasn't serving anybody in that moment. But only after 25, 26 years old, when I started saying, hang on a minute, I can't be stupid if I own 3 businesses. I can't be stupid if I'm in the process of starting a 4th. I can't be stupid if I've created wealth. I can't be stupid if. So that question, what if I'm not, right, changed what my brain started looking for.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone, to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. If you love to learn, be inspired, and succeed, we're here to speak and teach. I'm your host, Ben Albert. I believe if you're not living, you're dying. If you're not growing, you're withering. And if you're not engaged, you can turn this off right now. Because we here at LST are lifelong learners. And listen, I'm not your guru. I'm an ordinary guy on a journey to learn from the experts. My goal is to host each conversation with a beginner's mindset, learn, and let the experts speak and teach their truths. Join us! Oh yeah, and don't forget to subscribe. This episode is brought to you completely free. Get some stake in the game here. My fee for the show only takes a few moments. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Bonus points. Please leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right, let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to Learn, Speak, Teach on the Real Business Connections Network. I am here today with Rudy Ricksteins. Rudy, brother, how are you? What's happening, man?
I am really good. I just want to first and foremost start off by saying thank you so much. I appreciate you greatly, brother. Thank you for having me on your platform. I want to acknowledge right up front, time is by far our single most valuable resource. And the fact that you're committed to spending some time with me today, allowing me the opportunity to spend some time with you and your audience to spend some time listening to the conversation we're about to have. I just want to honor that because we could be doing anything. We could be anywhere. We could invest our time in anything and everything. And this is in the further development of ourselves and of others. And I want to make sure that we get to show up for everybody. And I want to say thank you for committing to spending that time with us today.
Well, thank you, Rudy. Not only do I receive that, I mirror everything you just said over to you. One thing, guys, Rudy pours all his energy in everything he does, but he seems to have endless energy at the same time. So you pour everything into everything you do. So I know this is going to be an incredible interview, and I appreciate you taking the time here. I like to start with the bio just so people can see where you are, but it's really important to see where, how you got here as well. Rudy is an entrepreneur, international speaker, author, and coach. For more than two decades, Rudy has impacted thousands of people who have experienced powerful transformation through his training, online courses, group and private coaching. This is where it gets really sexy. Rudy is leader called upon by leaders, awarded top five coach by Thrive Global alongside Tony Robbins, Jim Quick, Natalie Ellis, and honored by Business Insider as a top 20 thought leader in 2021, alongside Deepak Chopra, Lisa Nichols, and Dr. Joe Dispenza. Let's just stop there. So, Rudy, were you just, you know, you popped out of the womb a brilliant speaker, or was it a little difficult? Because obviously you've achieved great accolades and you're helping many people. But was it always like that? Well, where'd you get your start, Rudy?
You know, it's a beautiful question. I love the way you actually set it up in the very beginning, and you started off by saying this is where he's at, but the real story is what was the journey. And then you set me up to where I am now, and then you went back to asking the question, what's my story?
I'm trying to create some hooks here.
and it's so good, man, because you know, it really is an honor and it's a privilege. And I love the way you phrased it as well, saying this is where it gets sexy, because it is sexy to see your name on a cover of a magazine or a photograph or a bio. But really the story is how long it took me to get there. And so I had a really tough story from an internal dialogue. You know, I do a lot of work with people in wanting to achieve high levels of excellence in their lives. And so I work with high performers, and I'm setting the stage for our audience. I take people from where they are to where they want to go. So if they've achieved a lot in the view of the world, because success, well, it's marginal. It depends on what your definition of success is, but we take it to the highest levels possible. And that's because I understand the fundamentals that we've all been born and raised into experiencing traumas, big traumas or little traumas. So we call them big T or little T traumas. My life was full of little T traumas, meaning I didn't have one massive thing happen to me. I had many things happen to me over an extended period of time. I compounded those as insecurities of unworthiness, of not enough. At 16, I remember a teacher coming into a school, I beg your pardon, a teacher inviting a parent to come into our school. And he spoke to the entire school, motivational speaker, you can have and be and do anything. And I knew in that moment at 16, I was going to be a motivational speaker. I was going to support and develop people. That was what God put me on this earth to do. But it took me 20 more years to get the courage to start doing it. I actually started coaching 10 years before I started charging, because I didn't believe anyone would pay me for my services. Mm-hmm. I was out there doing the work, but I wasn't charging, right? And that just speaks into how deeply ingrained my little traumas were, and that had compounded over the extended period of my life. And so today, now in my mid-40s, when I get to work with people, I help people shorten that amount of time it takes them to do what it is that they want to do. I identify why we don't get to where we want to go to. And so my life experience has perfectly prepared me, as I believe everybody's life experience is perfectly preparing them for what it is that they need to do next. And so as you hear these words, ask yourself, what was it that happened to you? You know, I had many little traumas. I was abused by my older female cousin as a child, around 6 years old. I've had a gun put to my head three times. I've been held up in an armed robbery and had a guy make me get down on my hands and knees and put the gun to the middle of my eyebrow and then say, close your eyes. And in that moment, thinking that's the last thing I was ever going to see. And all of these things that stack up and add up to where I am now, man, I'm still here. But what's incredible is that I now get to connect with people that have had abuse happen to them as a child. I've connected to people that were in poverty. I've connected to people that were taught and told that they were stupid at a young age. My first grade teacher told me, you're stupid. You're a dunce. Go sit in the stupid chair. And that's where you're going to spend the year. And so my life was defined by all these little moments. But today, I can't think of a better education to do what I do today than having had all of those experiences. And so I hope that answers your question. You know, the journey wasn't I want to say the journey was long, the journey was hard, but it was perfect and it was beautiful because I'm now so perfectly equipped to be able to support and help people to do what I do. And so I kind of look back at it with a tremendous amount of gratitude and fondness, even though you would say, wow, you know, to be cheated on by your girlfriend or to have a gun put to your head or to have a teacher, you know, verbally or physically abuse you and whip you, like those things don't sound fun. But, you know, now they have given me such an incredible vantage point to serve the world.
It is incredible. I can't believe that you're categorizing these in little T's, like little traumas, because to me, a lot of those things, to a lot of listeners, that sounds really difficult and very traumatic, and it's not to diminish. Well, how do you, so you're categorizing these as smaller traumas. Is that a mindset thing? Because to me, having a gun put to my head and having my eyes closed, that to me sounds like a tremendously traumatic experience, Rudy.
You know, I think I differentiate the differences between them. It's a really good question. I differentiate the difference between them based on how long the incident happened and how much emotion I processed on it at the time and how long it took me to overcome. So if we break these up, and I don't want to really spend too much time on each one of them because that's not the story. The story is where I get to be today and what I get to do with what happened to me, because I believe life serves who we become, as I'd mentioned. And so, you know, my cousin, she molested me as a child. I was 6 years old and it happened over a weekend. It didn't happen every weekend for 7 or 8 years, right? And so that would be a big T trauma, as I've had many clients who have gone through abuse by their parents or their grandparents or their uncles or a next door neighbor. And that is a tremendous amount of abuse over an extended period of time, whereas mine was short-lived. I didn't even remember my abuse until a few years ago talking to a client. It just came to my memory and I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I buried that. And so that's why I classified it as a little T trauma, you know, being held up in an armed robbery and having somebody put you down on your hands and knees and close your eyes in that moment. Yes, that is life-threatening. It is scary. I remember shaking like a leaf. I mean, I drank, no kidding, probably half a bottle of Jack Daniels at the end of that experience because I needed to calm my nerves, none of which was serving me in the moment, but it just shows and speaks into my mental state at the end of the experience. But I got over it because I didn't have a gun put in my head every single day. It wasn't something I had all the time. So it wasn't chronic trauma. It was one moment, one time, one incident. The big T trauma I think that I did experience, if I was to classify it, would be going to school in a very government, military-styled environment where teachers cane you, where you know, beating you or hitting you with the ruler on your hands or in your head or on your face, or humiliating you or calling you stupid and separating you from other kids. You know, that was compounded abuse over a really long period of time, because I don't think there's anything worse than telling a child at 6 or 7 or 8 years old that they're stupid and they're not good enough and they're unworthy, because I then showed up as a kid that believed he was stupid and unworthy because an authority figure told me I was so. And so that would probably be the big trauma that I would say I experienced. The rest of it was just, you know, my processing of a short-term, you know, situation that became big T traumas because, you know, in your memory, you play it over and over and over and over. But the actual events to me were little T's.
I appreciate the distinction because a lot of people, so, I mean, Rudy, you live a life of gratitude. The way you frame in your mindset is pure. It's beautiful. And the way you frame things is different than a lot of people might frame them. So I like to hear the distinction coming from you. But to further the story, because, dude, I'll go on so many tangents here. To further the story, so we all have, many of us have big T traumas. We all have little T traumas throughout our life. And one thing I learned through a mentor of mine, you guys would get along great, Brian Bogert, is he talks about, you know, traumas he started with, and podcast episode like Learn Speak T 7 or 8 guys, I'll put it in the show notes. But he talked about how he basically went for all the what's in the world. He went for all the shoulds. You should do this. You should do that. What car, what job, what experience. And he found himself really broken and really beat up. And part of why your story and your journey resonated with me was it's quite a similar story in that sense But the way you tell it and the way you got through it is just magnificent. So what are your thoughts on that? The following the what's in the worlds and all the shoulds. And did you do that? What did you do? Walk us a little bit through your experience with that, because I feel like we all go through that.
You know, I think that that is the definition of life, right? We have an understanding of something because we haven't fully grasped the concept yet. And then we go out into the world and we experience things and we get feedback based on our experience. And that feedback then adds to our awareness. So if we're talking about personal lives or we're talking about business, all of this translates. You don't know what you don't know. And you think you know everything that you know when you don't know it all yet. And then the more you learn, you gain more perspective, more vantage points. And you're like, ah, yeah. And then you approach it slightly differently. So yes, I came from a very humble background, you know, the opposite side of the railway track, if you will. All my friends were very wealthy, came from very wealthy families. They all had trust funds. They all got cars and boats as toys and presents. And, you know, there I was working from the age of 7, 8 years old, delivering newspapers and working in a butchery, then a bakery, then a liquor store, and all these places to try and make money so that I could buy my own school clothes. I mean, that's the level of success that I came from. And so I looked at all of those things as I'm not enough because I'm not worthy of having shoes. I'm not worthy of having nice clothes. I'm not worthy of having brand new anything. And so my vantage point was always through the lens of I'm not good enough. And everybody else has. So that means they must be worthy. They must be good enough. They must be worthy of more love. And so everything I experienced, the cheating girlfriends, the not enough, the all of the relationships, the not having friends, all came from that same feeling. At one point in time, I made a decision that I was going to be a millionaire by the age of 25. I believed through my limited vantage point that if I created $1 million before the age of 25, every single person I went to school with, every teacher, every parent, everyone that ever judged me would have to look at me with respect because I came up from the ashes, so to speak, and achieved something great. And to me, what was great was money. And so I set out to create wealth and, you know, in not by my 25th birthday, but before my 26th birthday. So within that year, I did in fact achieve my goal. And I remember sitting in my brand new loft apartment that I had just bought, two stories overlooking these buildings below me. I had all the money that I could want. I had cash in the bank. I had brand new sports car. I had all these things. And I still felt like that little six-year-old boy that was called stupid, that was called a dunce, that was told to sit on the other chair that wasn't good enough. And that's when I realized I had put all of my value into something outside of me. And that was when I started my journey at 26 years old to start going inward. That particular evening was my 26th birthday. And so I started stacking evidence that, hang on, I can't be stupid if I have $1 million in the bank. I can't be stupid if I have a car or a house or a life or whatever these things were. I said, I have to have some value if I was able to achieve this. And so I started stacking and stacking and stacking my successes. And that's where my vantage point started to shift. And I realized I am smart. I am funny. I am charismatic. I can have, I can be, I can teach. And that's when all my internal work started. You know, I was listening to something this morning, a podcast on how people want to transform their bodies. And so they go to a gym and they manipulate their muscles and their food and all these things to create the physique that they want, but they still feel empty and unfulfilled when they get the six pack or the whatever it is they're creating because they never fell in love with their body, right? They just created a shape or a form, but the shape and the form still feels the same way to them regardless of the aesthetics. And I love the way that was phrased because we need to do the work inside. We need to fall in love with ourselves first, right? You can have and be and do and achieve anything and everything, but I guarantee you it will never feel like you think it's going to make you feel if you haven't first created value in you first. You know, I started talking to you today about how I work with so many high-performing people, and I often get asked, why do you work with high performers? Because they've already achieved, you know, great things. I work with billionaires. I've worked with royalty. I've worked with people that are big into startup and tech and all kinds of industries, athletes, celebrities, and yet they've achieved something, but they realize something's missing, right? I have the house, I have the car, I have the girl or the life or the kids or the whatever, but I still feel empty. And when we first create love inside of us, That's when we create the life outside of us. And that's when the fulfillment comes from. And true fulfillment in life, I believe, and I teach this, comes from giving selflessly of yourself every day in every single way. When you just give and serve and uplift and inspire people through what it is that you do as a being, that's when success and fulfillment follows you. And that's the definition of success. You know, I said success is marginal because it's not based on dollars. I don't care what I have in the bank account. I care about how I feel when I wake up in the morning. I care about how I feel when I go to bed at night. And I care about what happened in between and how many people did I touch and how much joy did I get from doing what I do. Never about the dollars and the cents. And yet, magically, the dollars and the cents just show up because I'm showing up for other people first.
The way you feel, the joy, the collective impact you get to create in those little bitty actions and interactions during the day, that success. And I presume it's got to be in alignment with who we were meant to be. Everyone is going to manifest this and live this differently, right? It's not going to just look like Ben or Rudy. We all have our unique place. So go ahead. I was going to go into a question. So I want to hear your thoughts.
You know, well, I was going to say, you know, not everybody is going to show up one day and create one of the top podcasts in the world like you have and impact and touch so many people's lives in every single way that you do it. Not everybody's meant to be a coach. Not everybody's meant to be a mentor. Not everybody's meant to, you know, start a multi-million dollar business or write a book. I understand that's not how your life, I don't mean you, I mean the audience, mm-hmm. not how your life might look. But how can you be of service in your life? Most people that come to me, they say, Rudy, help me find my vision. Help me find my passion. And they can be 30 years old, 40 years old, 50 years old. They can have $1 billion in the bank. They can have $1,000 in the bank. Most people, I want to say probably 60% of the people that come to me say, I have no idea what I'm supposed to do. I have no idea what my vision is. And so we start with creating vision and purpose. But I'm going to tell you, vision and purpose starts where you are at. Yesterday morning, I went to the grocery store and I bought groceries. My wife is traveling. And so I had the privilege of going to pick up groceries for the house for the week. And when I was in the grocery store, I was cashing out and there was a gentleman bagging my groceries. And there was another gentleman, both of them around about 18, 19 years old. And he was actually, you know, cashing me out. And right as they were finishing with the last few items, I leaned over and I grabbed two jumbo-sized or super-sized Kit Kat bars. And they were the closest to me. And I grabbed them and I said, oh, can you add those to the order? And they put it through. And the gentleman that was bagging, he said, oh, man, those are awesome. And he was really excited that I was getting these Kit Kats. And when I had finished and I had taken my groceries and I put them in my cart and I'd finished paying, I took out the two Kit Kats and I handed one to the gentleman that had bagged and I handed the other one to the cashier. And I looked at both of them making eye contact and I said, I really appreciate you and I value you. Thank you so much for what you did for me today. And then both of them had this look like I had slapped them. They couldn't believe it. They just stood there. And the one guy said, this isn't necessary. This is really not. And he tried to give it back. He was so shocked. The other one was like, I'll take it. This is awesome. And then when I left, I heard them talking about the experience. Now, the reason I bring that story in is my wife and I will do that every time we go to the grocery store, right? And so we like to pay tribute to people and we like to give thanks and practice gratitude, not just for ourselves and for our life, but for people in our life. That is an act of service. That is an act of being in your purpose. And so the purpose, I believe, starts with how can you create an impact in someone's life? Some of the companies I work with, they have these massive goals. They want to take their company from $500,000 to $1 billion, or they want to go from $1 billion to $3 billion, or they want to go from 100,000 to 500,000, right? And they come to me and they say, how? How do we do this? And I never touch product. I never touch marketing. I never touch any of these things because I don't have to. You know your product. You know your marketing. I know people. And what we do is get leaders to walk into a room and buy a Kit Kat for their staff. And I don't mean a Kit Kat, but you understand the principle, right? Going in and seeing people, making eye contact, a value, I appreciate you. All of a sudden, the business starts to hit these massive goals because people are starting to be seen, to be valued, to be appreciated. It's the number one thing we all want. We all just want to be seen and valued. And when we can be seen and be valued at a grocery store, gas station, in an executive meeting. It doesn't matter what the circumstances, you're going to get the best out of every single person in that room. And I think that when people start to show up in their lives like that, that's where magic happens. And that's where real, true, long-lasting fulfillment comes from.
I love this. You're reminding me of literally 2 days ago, Pino's Deli down the street. So Wegmans Supermarkets, one of the biggest supermarkets in the region, got one literally next to my house. So we go there for all the deli stuff, all the cooked goods, this and that. I go to Pino's, you get an entree and two sides. And this was the reverse. This was someone doing it for me, whether he realized it or not. He says, "That is the perfect order. That's exactly what I would have got." And he overflowed those sides to the point where you couldn't even close the container. And I come home, I eat that. And 48 hours later, I'm talking to my girlfriend and I'm like, we should go to Pino's more. They've got all the cold cuts Wegmans has. And I didn't quite even realize, but that brand affinity was built through that one gentleman making my day by over-delivering in an authentic way, too. I don't think he says that to everybody, but the man orders his favorite stuff. He steps up to say it and spread that love. So thank you for doing that. Literally, every time you go to the grocery store, you kind of go out of your way to make those small changes.
So it's in every interaction, and I want to be very clear, right? I don't only go to a grocery store and then mechanically, calculatedly, go and do this. And you said something so beautiful, and I want to make sure the audience picks that up because it was really, truly profound. When something is done and it's calculated, it doesn't have the same effectiveness. When something is authentic, it comes from within you, then you are landing the impact that is what you're wanting to do. My desire when I wake up every morning, my very first thought is, thank you, God, that I am here and that I get to create an impact today. That's how I start my day. I am abundantly grateful for the opportunity to be of service. I serve my wife. I serve my kids. I serve the grocery store's clerks. I serve myself. I serve as I just go everywhere in every interaction, and it doesn't matter where. Sometimes it's a Kit Kat. Sometimes it's a smile. Sometimes it's a kind word. You know, you, I would imagine, and you get to tell me if this is not the case, but I would be surprised if it's not. You walk into a room, and I would imagine people are overflowing your sides all the time. You know, I met you on a really large platform. There were a lot of people on a virtual room, and you stood out over everybody. I called you out 3 times during that event as I was speaking because through your screen, through how you stand, how you listen, how you nod, how you smile. At the time, I was doing all the talking, and yet I kept coming back to, man, Ben, oh yeah, Ben's in this. What, Ben, what do you have to say? Ben, could you add, because your presence is so beautiful, so strong, so profound, and that's because you at some point in time have done that for yourself, and then by simply being you, you've created a safe space for other people. Your podcast is one of the biggest podcasts that we have, and you think about the volume of podcasts out in the world, and yours has taken off and soared and soared and soared, and you gain more and more and more followings. Yes, you have beautiful, powerful, profound speakers coming onto your podcasts every single time, but it's you. People are coming back for you. They're coming back for your energy, how you treat people, how you see people. And, you know, most people are going to be listening to this through audio, but I urge people to watch you, because through watching you, they get to see what does this look like put into practice. And that's what true power is about, genuinely, authentically caring about people, wanting to create an impact. And that's why you're so successful. If people can just duplicate that, now we're not calculatedly thinking about, do I buy a Kit Kat? We just be, right? That's going to a grocery store and helping someone bag your groceries, or saying to the person, hey, you look like you've had a tough day. Let me bag the groceries and you watch me for a minute, right? Or whatever it is, you get to be in service. And so I think it becomes organic and natural, and it'll be something organic and natural for you when you show up at that, how do I serve in this moment with every interaction, whether you're the CEO, whether you're the guy at the bottom in the mailroom, whatever it is that you're doing, you get to be of service.
I almost think you don't need that with every interaction. It's how do I serve in this moment? Period. And that happens to be every interaction. First off, I receive it. I appreciate the compliments. Literally, I'm doing 2 things. One, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I read a lot of books. I follow a lot of people. So I believe the reason the podcast is successful is I'm really good at sifting through and bringing on guests like yourself that just over deliver for the audience. Two, I want to slow down to speed up to something you had said earlier. I've done a lot of habit stacking. This didn't happen overnight. A previous guest Instagram messaged me today, said, you know, we've gotten a lot of great feedback, this, and that. You're really a natural interview. And I'm like, I am not. I'm like a cold case, bad interview, introvert. Like, no, I'm not a natural interviewer, but I learned how to show up in my best self in something that I really love, which is curiosity, growth, just love of learning. I'm wondering, I first off believe that it's never square peg, round hole. There's no key to success. It's a combination lock. So no one should listen, just take Ben's combination, Rudy's combination, and try it because it won't work. We're all going to have our own combination. But I want to go back to something you said earlier. You had your traumas. You basically got anything you ever wanted. I mean, you were fit. You were wealthy. You had the luxury cars, but you started stacking. What was it that you personally stacked? What changes in your life did you make that started to turn you in the right direction to who you are right now today?
So there is no one size fits all because we are all on a different journey. I want people to imagine they are in a vehicle and that vehicle is taking them from point A to point B. The point B is different for every single person. So we can never judge the vehicle that we're in to somebody else's vehicle because we're going in two completely different places. We're never going to get to the same destination at the same time. And it's all based on that vantage point that we have. So we kind of need to start off by just giving ourselves a break. Success is based on how we feel when we wake up and when we go to bed. Everything in between is really not as important. It's about how do we feel? What is the dominant way that we feel? Your question was very specific, and it was, you know, what is the thing that I did? How did I stack? And stacking is a word I use a lot in my business. So stacking success is really important because the one thing that is a one-size-fits-all is the brain. The brain functions the same for everybody. And I've done 20 years of studying human behavior and studying the brain and how to create the best out of a situation through how we choose to look at it. And we can call that mindset or anything else. But ultimately, the human brain has become this incredible organ that has the ability to create efficiencies. And so if we learn to rewire, retap in, or focus in on certain key areas, we can focus on new evidence that's coming into the brain. So let me explain it to you this way. The human brain picks up information at a rate of between 1 million and 10 million bits of data every single second. So right now on a Zoom call, we're probably pulling in around about 1 million bits of data, you know, sight, sound, smell. You're in New York City and you're on a subway train. Well, you're at 10 million, right? There's just a tremendous amount of information flooding to you. Your brain is making decisions based on 100% of that information coming in 100% of the time. You are only consciously aware of less than 50 bits of information per second. Out of 1 to 10 million, you're only aware of, meaning logically processing that you can think of, 50 bits of data. We limit the amount of data, meaning we siphon it into what we are aware of consciously versus unconsciously based on our belief system. If you believe you're stupid, the brain is looking for 50 bits of data to prove to you once again every second that you are, in fact, unworthy, stupid, not good enough, unlovable, you're never worth anything, your dreams aren't going to come true, you know, the world is ending, recession's coming, whatever, right? So we only find that data. If we start asking different questions and we start giving different facts and we verify facts, meaning proof that could be stood in a court of law, and that reinforces a new thought or a new belief system, the brain will find 50 new forms of information to verify that. So I got told I was stupid at 6 years old, so I believed I was stupid. I didn't study. I didn't do homework. I really didn't pay attention. I was a clown. I was a noisy, irritating kid in the classroom. I was constantly being grounded or kicked out or caned or beaten. I mean, I was that kid you didn't want to hang out with in school. And I think I really was trying to be cool. And so I wasn't serving anybody in that moment. But only after 25, 26 years old, when I started saying, hang on a minute, I can't be stupid if I own three businesses. I can't be stupid if I'm in the process of starting a fourth. I can't be stupid if I've created wealth. I can't be stupid if. So that question, what if I'm not, right, changed what my brain started looking for. Then I started reinforcing information. So an example of that is I would say, wow, you know what? I have this one friend. I've been friends with this guy for 20 years. I'm 26 years old. For 20 years, this guy has stood by my side. If I only have one real friend, let me tell you, I've got to be worthy of this guy's friendship because he's a pretty cool guy. And so I stack that I am worthy because he thinks I'm worthy. I don't think I'm worthy yet, but he must because he's been here for 20 years. Then I started saying, hang on, I have money in the bank. I've got to be worthy because I created that. No one gave that to me. I stacked that. Then I started saying, hang on, I own three businesses. I'm working on a fourth. I've got to be pretty smart to be able to do that. I mean, you can't fail three times into success, right? So I started to stack that. Then I started studying and reading and then regurgitating, then teaching. And then people would come to me for advice. And every time someone came to me for advice, I would say, hang on, I've got to have value. If people are asking me questions and listening to what I have to say, there has to be value there. And so those are the stacking moments. Now what the brain does is it fires new neurological pathways to reinforce creating new haptic nerves that says Rudy is smart. Yes. When Rudy does something, Rudy is successful. And so I stack it and I stack it and I stack it. I want to give your audience something. And if you only do this, if you only do this, I promise you, your life will irrevocably change.
Pause, guys. Grab a pencil, grab a pen, grab a notepad. Get ready to write this down. It sounds like this is going to be huge. Pause it if you need to take a moment. Pull the car over. All right, Rudy, go.
So let's talk about how you stack success.
I totally killed your flow. I apologize for that.
You know what? You totally did. And I was giving your audience some time to really regroup. And I want you to hear this really, really loud and clear. And it's the simplest thing you could ever possibly do, but we don't do it. To stack success, what you need to do is move your body to create motion with thought, with sound, right? And that is energy in motion. Energy in motion is emotion. And so what I mean by that is to stack success, when you've achieved something great, that is a high five, a fist pump, a shout, a Superman pose, and to make that sound and that movement when you do something that is literally moving energy in motion towards the desired outcome that you want. So I love the NFL. Now, I came from South Africa. If you guys didn't get the accent, not from America, but I'm American today. And so when I first came to America, I had to relearn all the new sports, right? Because we didn't have NFL growing up. We didn't have baseball growing up. And so, or even basketball for that matter. And so I started watching the NFL and I love the NFL because it is such a mind controlled sport. There's so much that goes into it. But what I didn't care for was the showboating at the end of a touchdown or an interception where the whole team runs over and jumps down onto the field and eight guys are in a row and they're paddling like a canoe or a kayak, or one guy throws the ball like it's a hand grenade and the entire team hits the ground in perfect order at the end. And I was like, man, why show off at the end of a touchdown? Just be humble. It used to really irk me. And then I understood, oh, that's what they're doing. And so what I want to explain to your audience for, and to really emphasize the point, when somebody runs in a touchdown or grabs the game-winning touchdown catch, or there's an interception on the five-yard line and they win the game, and everybody runs to the one side of the field and they do that choreographed dance at the end, they've rehearsed that, they've practiced that, they have intentioned that, they're using sound, they're using smell, they're using movement, and they're adding tremendous emotion into that. And they've practiced it again and again and again. So the brain already is celebrating the end result of what it is that they are intentioning, which is bringing the actual event into fruition. And so when in a game, they get the catch, the interception, the touchdown, and they all run over and they practice it, that is the final physical manifestation of the visualization that they created and practiced and rehearsed time and time again, meaning they've taken the question of, will we get this out of the way? They've already told their brains, It is inevitable because we already stacked the success, and we've stacked the success so many times. We've practiced, we've rehearsed, we know it, that when they get there, it's inevitable they make the catch. The play happens. I want people to do that in every moment of their day. When money hits your bank account, I don't care if it's $50. I don't care if it's your paycheck. I don't care if it's a cash refund. You celebrate that. Yes. Woo! Yeah. Because when that happens, you're telling your brain, money comes to me quickly and easily, and I achieve success and money. When you finish reading a book, jump up and down and be like, woo, yeah, I finished that. When you make your bed, stack that success over and over and over, and your brain will create new pathways that says every time Ben does something, he not only finishes it, but he is successful at it, and then he celebrates the end result. And so when somebody comes to you one day and says, hey, man, you know, I'm going into this new business venture and I'm looking for a partner to do this, your brain's not saying, don't do it. You're unworthy. It's not going to work. You're going to be taken advantage of. Your brain says, woo, yeah, we're always successful. Of course we're going to do it. And then the venture will be successful. So it's always energy in motion, emotion. Celebrate and stack successes while you move your body, make a sound, feel the physical emotion, change your physiology through expressing yourself in the end result of the action, never in the doing of what it takes to get there, just the end result.
Energy and emotion. I'm drawing a blank on his name. It's Charlie something, but he goes, I'm on a winning streak. And he does that all day, every day. That's how he celebrates. He has a term, like a slogan, I'm on a winning streak, and he stacks those wins. To give a counterexample, I just want your opinion on this. This isn't even to be like, I'm more curious what you think because I don't know. One thing that I've heard on the opposite end of things is Emmitt Smith, a football player, every time he scored a touchdown, he'd run it in, hand it to the ref, run back to the bench. And part of what I was taught that was good about that is it shows that he belongs. It shows that he's not done yet. It shows that he's there to win. What are your thoughts on that? Because that's the polar opposite way of expressing yourself in a winning streak moment.
You see, he's actually doing exactly the same thing. He's just choosing to express it slightly differently. And so he is intentionally, with that emotion, handing the ball over and in his mind being very victorious and steadfast and runs back and sits on the bench and is trying to show the unemotion around the success of what he's got because he's wanting to be humble or be perceived a certain way, but he's still very intentionally creating that act. The very first time he did that, he probably wasn't intentional about stacking the success of it, but when he sat on the bench and he processed it, he was. Then the second time he did that, his brain learned the same behavior and said, oh, that's what we do when we're successful. And so he goes inward, he gets quiet. You know, there are athletes out there that don't stack success the same way. Tom Brady, as an example, you know, he never runs to the sideline and does a celebratory dance or jig at the end. He doesn't slam the football. He just goes up and celebrates with his teammates and runs back to the side of the field. And so he does that from a very humble position, but the success is the same. The way that he processes it is the same. His understanding of what success means is, well, the touchdown doesn't make me successful. Stacking of all the touchdowns, more than the other team, all the success, that is the accumulation of many of them. But if you look at the action between each one, they're all producing the very same result. It's just, how do you choose to behave when you do something right? And if you were to look at his life as an example, you would see he would stack all success exactly the same way. If he runs to the bench and just sits down, he probably does the same thing when he gets a really big paycheck or he gets a big payday or he gets an advertising deal or he meets the perfect person, whatever that situation, it's going to create the same result over duplicated again and again with consistency that drives the same result.
I love it. I'm opening a rabbit hole and we'll end it soon, but I'm wondering if that person celebrating that success and feeling that joy is actually more fulfilled and the person that isn't celebrating might actually reach the same outcome or be better or be more driven in quotations, but feel less joy in the obtaining of the success. I'm wondering. I watched The Last Dance. And Michael Jordan didn't seem like a happy person. I love Michael Jordan, but he seemed so driven on winning that it made me wonder what is the level of fulfillment in his life. Open a rabbit hole. You can comment or I can go somewhere else, but I'm just curious, man. I'm just asking curious questions.
So I can't speak for Michael Jordan specifically, right? But what I can say is that through my life's work and through working with a lot of high performers, CEOs, executives in companies, entire corporations, or just individuals, on average, as I'd mentioned, around about 60% of people say that they're unfulfilled. Most of the people I work with are successful in dollars, are successful in business or stature, but they're unfulfilled within themselves, or they've achieved something, they're mostly happy, but they want something even bigger and they want to grow even more. And it's always grounded in the same thing. You can have all of the awards, you can have the most rings, you can have achieved the most successes on the field. Those are going to give you short-term successes because that heightened emotion, that spike of chemical dump into the body that says, good boy, you know, like you train a dog and you give a dog a treat. We're exactly the same way. The brain produces the chemical that says, oh my gosh, I'm invincible. This is incredible. But emotion only lasts in the body for 60 seconds. And so after 60 seconds, that emotion dump into your body is gone. And then if you think about it again, your body dumps the chemical dump again. You think about it again, it dumps again, but then it gets less and less and less. And all of a sudden, you're not being fueled by that win, that touchdown, that cup, that award, that trophy. And now what happens in your real life? And so if you look at athletes aren't on the court or on the field. CEOs and celebrities aren't always closing the biggest deals, right? We're in between. What happens in between the biggest deals? What happens in between the big payday? What happens in between the contracts or the touchdowns or the hoop record? And so every one of those are great, but it has to be grounded in something. And that's where purpose and fulfillment comes from. I'm going to repeat something that I teach. We said it in the beginning of the call today. True fulfillment in life comes from giving selflessly of yourself every day in every way, right? And so when you can give selflessly of yourself, so if Michael Jordan were to be out in the field teaching, sharing his knowledge and sitting on the sidelines and watching other people achieve success, you're going to find a really happy man sitting on that sideline. If he is, you know, running up to score the winning points for the game and he passes the ball to a rookie and the rookie scores it, that would give him more joy and fulfillment than he would if he got another record. And so that's where fulfillment and joy can truly come from. And sometimes it's okay to be the person scoring the points, right? That feels good too if the whole team is elevated. But I really want you to think about it from this vantage point. When you can elevate yourself, your happiness, your joy, your fulfillment, your expectation, your level of success, right? Tom Brady joins any team, the team wins, right? And it's not, he's not the winner. His expectation rises the tide, right? And so you think about a tide comes into a harbor and all ships go up with that tide. And the same thing is true. All ships go down with that tide. And so if you're now walking into a room and you're happy, you're going to elevate everybody in the room. If you're walking into a room and you're unfulfilled and it's not good enough or it didn't last long enough, then it's all going to come down. And we've got to create that internal dialogue within ourselves, fall in love with ourselves in what we're doing, and then we're going to be able to create a more fulfilling and joyful life, not only for ourselves, but every other person that we're around.
For ourselves, for everyone, that collective impact. I'm imagining an orchestra where there's all these pieces and they all come together to have that beautiful piece of art. It's every single piece in that puzzle through that collective impact. But it seems like depending on the orchestra or the size, one weak key could bring everyone down. So if we can all live in our fullest, we can create beautiful music. I'm wondering, because we've talked a lot about multimillionaires and Fortune 500 CEOs and billionaires and this and that. Can you help the little guy as well? Because a lot of our listeners are entrepreneurs. They're in business development. They're in sales. And they're not quite where they're going to be just yet. You could probably even correct the way I phrased that. I think when we talked, you didn't like the just yet. They're perfect as they are now. They're perfect as they are now, but they aren't currently in their bank account a billion-dollar CEO. Can you help just about anybody walk through a little bit of maybe the podcast or the virtual or some of the things you do, Rudy?
So we talk about being in a place of service, I work with mostly corporations or high-level CEOs because I enjoy that work the most, right? And it's about, what do you enjoy? I can help anybody and everybody that has a mind and is ready to take committed action, meaning you're not sitting in victimhood, you're not poor me, you're ready to say, why am I in the place I'm in? And so I come from a vantage point of service. My calendar is divided into, I have so much availability for corporations, I have so much availability for my wife, I have so much availability for my kids, and I have so much availability for solo entrepreneurs, and I have so much availability for children where I can get to help. And so I do work with a lot of people one-on-one that are, you know, 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds starting a business, wanting to elevate a business. They're doing all the work themselves and helping to elevate. I teach people how to become coaches. I teach people how to, you know, become known or famous, if you will, and spread your message, because through becoming more known, you reach more people, right? And so I do work with those people and I encourage them to reach out to me. We obviously have a podcast. My wife and I share a podcast together, Empowered Life. And that is just about sharing stories from our life and how we can help share what we've experienced, what we learned from it, to shorten the amount of time that somebody else going through the same thing, because they might pick up a nugget and say, oh, wow, I don't have to wait 20 years to become a coach or a speaker or a mentor. I can do that today and save 20 years or 15 years or 10 years by gaining some vantage point. And then added to that, I have online programs where people don't have to pay thousands of dollars to learn or to grow. They can just, you know, do a $200 course or a $1,000 course, and they can then learn that way. Everybody learns differently and everybody's at a different place in life. But the real answer to the question is, are you worth investing in you? And are you worth investing at you at $200 for a course? Are you worth investing in you at a free podcast episode? Are you worth investing at 10 or 20 or 50 or $100,000 into coaching? And I don't mean me, I just mean anybody in general. And the answer is always yes, but you've got to get there. And then you've got to find somebody that is going to resonate with you and where you are. And so, Ben, you said something earlier, and I love that you invest in you. You believe you are worthy of more and you believe you're worthy of serving more. That's why you're constantly consuming books. You're constantly consuming podcasts because you believe you're worth it. And that's why you have mentors. That's why you pay people a lot of money to support and develop your dreams. I am a coach. I'm a very successful coach. I do really well. And if I showed you what I've achieved and what my clients have achieved through working with me, it would be impressive. But why I'm mentioning that is because I too have a coach. I'm always stretching, learning, growing, wanting to know more. I'm also always learning, taking courses, reading books, because I am like you, Ben. I want to know more and I want to gain more and I want to be better at being a person. And so it is always about that development. That didn't start until I believed I was worth more and having more. So for the solopreneur that doesn't have a coach, go read a book, take a podcast, do a course, you know, just start to inhale information. And when you get to a place where you're ready to elevate your life in a very short amount of time, spend a lot of money in your development, hire me, hire a coach, hire Ben, hire somebody, grow yourself, develop yourself further, because there's something that comes from working with someone like us. And that is that you get somebody to hold you accountable. You know, they say you're 95% more likely to achieve your goal if somebody holds you accountable to that goal. So if your goal was to become a New York Times bestselling author or to become a speaker or to list your company, you know, with an IPO, whatever it is that you want to do, and you got people to hold you accountable and you were 95% more likely to achieve it, would you do it? Of course you would. So why aren't you?
What's beautiful is you're preaching to the people that made it to the end of this podcast, the crew that are investing in themselves and are going to continue to invest in themselves. I'll put your podcast, you can send me a link to some of these virtual training programs, so on and so forth, in the show notes. We barely have enough time for the rapid fire round, so we're going to do the shortest one ever. Short, sweet, fill in the blank, easy answer questions. Start off with coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Are you a morning person?
Absolutely. It wasn't always.
Favorite time of year?
Holidays. Definitely Christmas, but because of my kids.
Like me, you struggle taking breaks. However, if you were to take a break, what are you doing on that break?
You know, always filling something, like something active, reading, outdoors, nature, inevitably always with my wife.
We'll do one more, and you can reuse many of the great things you've said today, but billboard, side of the road, huge. Everyone is going to see it, every gender, every ethnicity, every age group. What would you put on that billboard to send a message out to the entire world?
You already have everything within you that you think you need.
Rudy, thanks again for coming on the show. Anything else we should know?
I'm going to extend a free gift to your entire audience. I'll send you the link. It's for a $200 program called the Mindset Reset. And it is a 30-day program that gives you some of the information as to how to reset your mind. If you're at the end of the podcast, you've earned it. Go ahead, take the program, reach out to me if you have any questions. And I just want to say thank you, Ben. I appreciate you greatly. I have a tremendous amount of love and respect for you. I love your audience. And I just want you to know that it's an honor and a privilege to be here and to have my voice heard. Thank you.
Thank you, Rudy. And guess what? I have the Mindset Reset and I haven't taken it yet. So if anyone listening wants someone to be an accountability buddy, let's go through it together. Rudy, we'll talk soon, man. It's been such a pleasure.
I appreciate you, man.
Thanks again for listening to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. You need to go subscribe if you haven't yet. This show is completely free. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right. Thanks once more for listening to LST. I am so grateful. Talk to you soon.